Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the last podcast of March. And something I should have been plugging all along, and if you follow us on Twitter and Facebook, you might have seen, but also hashtag tripod. Last time, of course, I brought you 1995's Power Rangers, and this time at regular panelist Matt Quinn's suggestion, we have a Power Rangers knockoff movie. Now, before you freak out because I said knockoff and movie, while this does kind of sort of look like a YouTube star vehicle thing, I don't even know how to put this, but you can find it in full on YouTube. This is a Mark Hamill vehicle, and when I say Mark Hamill, I mean he's in it for all of, I think, 10 seconds. But it's also kind of sort of Power Rangers before Power Rangers. A guy gets a magical thing, turns into a karate fighter. And if I had to guess, I know it's based on an anime, possibly a manga as well, but also this kind of looks like what the show that was a knockoff of what Power Rangers was the American version of, if that even makes sense. Yeah, can you hear my little co-host in my lap right now? She's being cute. Now, so hashtag myopia tripod, and in order to pass the buck, of course, there's many other very good podcasts on our network, including, ESO, which I've been on, and so has, nope, Matt's part, I don't think made it, but I've been on the main feed, and ESO Marvel Cinematic Universe and DC Universe is out there, on top of other very many good shows, but I will also recommend one that is off network as well. I already plugged on the Twitter feed, We Hate Movies, but why don't you give a shot to Tannis? Tannis is from Pacific Coast Productions, and it's kind of a sci-fi fantasy thing. Think if Serial was set in the land of Welcome to Night Vale. So without further ado, enjoy The Guyver.
It's me.
This thing must be stopped!
Let me have it.
Right here, boss.
It's not too late. You can still come back. Get away with it.
These inhuman experiments must stop.
Hey guys!
Hi!
Check out Rec Level 3.
What's that?
We're a gaming, geek, nerd culture fandom podcast.
Ooh. Wow!
And you can find us every Friday at 11:30 a.m. on reclevel3.com.
Yay!
Welcome to Myopia Defend Your Childhood. This week, not even the dog will stop fighting, because we saw microphones in every shot, bad lighting for no reason, and we watched the Guyver. Not the fun one with paper clips. Everyone's favorite Power Rangers knockoff starring Mark Hamill. I'm Nick Hoffman, editor-in-chief of Dude Letter, of Myopia Defend Your Childhood, Dude Letter Incorporated, whatever, I don't even care anymore. On panel is...
Matthew W. Quinn, webmaster of the world according to Quinn.
Look it up. It's still on, what is it, Zanga or LiveJournal?
Blogger.
Oh, there we go. And?
Hello, this is Daniel, and I have no mutant powers whatsoever.
Neither did anyone in this movie, including acting.
I thought that was what they were going for, though. They so wanted them to be the X-Men.
They also so wanted people to explain werewolves via genetic mutation and head trauma. Also, I'm pretty sure someone's brain is ripped out through a light bulb.
Mine.
Okay. I don't know what's going on to this movie, so I'm going to just go ahead and try to maintain. Daniel, you're going to do the plot. I'm sorry. Matt, you get to start us off by telling us if this held up as well as you remembered.
Mm-hmm. I want to know where you saw this movie originally, because this just seems like such a weird childhood thing. It's like I was watching the credits, and it's like, okay, we've got... Screaming Mad George. We got the producer of Reanimator. We've got the guy from The Hills Have Eyes, the original one that Wes Craven did. What the hell kind of childhood did you have?
My parents got rid of cable, but the real basic package we still had Cartoon Network and the Sci-Fi Channel. And being a little geek boy that I was, the Sci-Fi Channel was of much greater interest. So I have seen the original Guyver, the second Guyver movie, which I heard was better. And incidentally had a new actor playing the lead.
No kidding.
And
they didn't keep...
a bunch of other B-movies from the 80s and 90s.
Well, I mean, so that explains some of the choices we've done on the podcast already. It's been a while since we've done a Matt movie, and I feel good about it. And I kind of want this to be our first riff, because this is such a thing. But when I asked... You guys couldn't hear it, because Matt didn't even show up as a blip on the sine waves here, but... When I asked him if it held up as well as he goes, meh, essentially. He turned into a minion for half a second.
Banana!
Indeed.
That's what watching this movie will do to you. It will make you talk like that.
Banana!
The baby wasn't even amused. I guess before we go further, Daniel, can you give me the plot? Nope.
I'll do it.
I'll try it.
Okay.
Based on this wonderful, wonderful, wonderful text crawl that we get at the beginning of this movie, it's a work of art, people.
Which is also narrated.
Yes, because nobody who watches this movie could ever read.
Yeah.
Humanity was apparently a biological weapon that was put on the planet Earth by aliens. Who these aliens are never explained. What exactly our purposes is never explained. But some of the people that were placed on this planet have sort of mutations that help them go above and beyond other people. In this case, it means they'll dress like Power Rangers villains. There's this one weapon, above all, that Dr. Hill from Reanimator really wants to get his hands on, and it's called the Guyver. And apparently, it's just a regular Power Rangers suit that makes you act kind of like RoboCop, but not really.
Yep.
So Dr. Hill's out to get this, and this one karate instructor ends up accidentally finding it and unleashing the power of the Guyver. I don't know where they got that name. I got nothing on that name except somebody was probably drunk at 2 a.m. watching syndicated TV. And Mark Hamill's a CIA agent in this movie who wants to find the Guyver for himself and prevent it from falling into the wrong hands.
It even looks like the badge that they have in Power Rangers.
Yeah, it does.
That they put in front of them and then they become the Power Rangers.
But this is before the Power Rangers, I'm pretty sure.
Well, the Japanese TV show existed already, but I think you're right that the American version didn't.
Correct.
If this movie had included the phrase "it's morphin' time," it would have been salvageable, but it didn't.
Okay, now, I want to make it clear here. Daniel explained the plot, and what a plot is something that drives a movie to make things connect together. It is not a timeline for the movie. I don't know if I could explain the timeline for the movie, because A, the movie makes no sense. B, of a 100-minute-some-odd movie, it... well, to be blunt, is about 45 minutes of the most boring fighting I've ever seen. And then C, it tries to make jokes. And nothing is worse than when a movie tries to make jokes and they aren't funny. So, Matt, I'm going to ask you now. You tell me where Daniel got it wrong, because...
Yes, please do.
Well, because you were telling me that you could do the plot outline, and I think Daniel did a fine job with the plot outline, but I don't feel any more satisfied, so you're going to have to help me.
Well... There really was no need for the opening crawl at all. They could have just opened it with Dr. Sekugawa being chased through Los Angeles by the thug guys. And then think, oh, some guy's getting robbed by some gangbangers. Oh, no, suddenly everyone starts turning into monsters. That would be an audience grabber right there. Without the opening is just unnecessary.
I just want to say, before we move on too much further, you did a fine job, but I'm nowhere near satisfied. Pretty much describes my dating life.
and some of the stuff, like how he finds the Guyver and bonds with it by accident, is actually pretty decently set up. Like, it's not prolonged.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, it's not really contrived at all. He's wondering where his girlfriend or love interest, whatever the precise relationship is, has gone. He follows after her. He finds the Guyver and then accidentally bonds with the process of being beat up by some gang members.
Are we talking about the woman whose dad was murdered by Dr. Hill?
The worst actress who's ever existed ever?
Yeah.
Like, I'm saying it was not really contrived. It kind of made sense.
So I want you to explain what you think contrived means, because it makes no... Well, the thing is, it makes no sense. Because it seems like the second he contacts the Guyver, touches... First of all, me saying the word Guyver is making me mad, because it's the stupidest name for anything ever. Whenever he's grabbing the MacGuffin, the MacGyver-uffin, I don't even know what to say. Like, it's this weird badge thing that looks like, I don't know, an ulcer that's made out of bad plastic leather.
Well, apparently that was the case, and the only thing that mattered was that little ball of Cronenbergian flesh in it that started growing, like cloning itself after it got damaged.
Also, it disappears and then embeds itself in his spine. But then second, I say it's contrived. I would agree with Daniel, because why does it choose him? Other people touch it with their hands throughout.
It didn't choose him. He was in the process of getting the stuffing beat out of a bunch of gang members, accidentally headbanged it.
But why did no one else get it?
Because no one else shoved it onto their head.
Well, didn't the opening crawl say something like it only works for a few certain people?
I don't remember
that. That's exactly what it said. This is, I mean, but that's just it. The other thing is, too, Dr. Hill at one point goes, these are the monsters that have existed for all time. The vampires, the werewolves, the boogeymen, right?
Yeah.
But he's cloning them in his lab and turning normal people into monsters. So they haven't been, unless he also is older than time itself. Right?
He kind of reminded me of the main...
It could be that they might have popped up individually now and then, and he's just jump-starting it by manufacturing them.
So is this about human evolution? Already it's a world without God, well, right? Like, they make that clear in the opening scroll as well. There is no God. It's just man is put here by alien races, and then some of them are monsters and also plot.
I don't understand how turning Mark Hamill into Gregor Samsa is a step forward in human evolution. But
that is the dumbest thing. And then they superimpose googly eyes?
Yes. Yes, they do.
Yeah, that was not a good idea because clearly, making somebody with Zoonoid doesn't make them your little slave boy.
Is that what they're called?
Zoonoids, yeah, because the Dr. Sagawa was a fish man, and he turned on them and was able to fight them. So making Mark Hamill into a giant cockroach, yeah, he's going to not be happy with them, and he's going to come after them. And he's
but
bigger
they died. He died immediately.
Because
yeah.
that was a missed opportunity because Dr. Balkas could have guilt-tripped them by saying, oh, you made me take him out of the machine too early.
I just want to...
Because that's what he flat-out said. Oh, he wasn't in the soup long enough.
I just want to say this right now. Screaming Mad George co-directed this, and he's more famous as a makeup artist. I've seen Society, which Brian Yuzna directed, and features like a 20-minute alien orgy scene thing. I've seen Freaked. I've seen Reanimator and Bride of Reanimator. He's a good makeup artist. The costumes and makeup here suck.
Well, and I would say, too, this is an H.R. Giger thing where they were intentionally trying to look different, and therefore it looked like rubber Jar Jar Binks suits.
It did.
This was rough. I'm sorry. We need to get a little bit more into this movie because... Would you like me to read the opening scroll? Because I found it.
Yes, please.
Oh, boy. At the beginning of time, aliens came to Earth to create the ultimate organic weapon. They called it mankind. By planting a special gene into man, they created the Zoonoids, humans who can change into at will into super monsters. That's not true, because people aren't forced to turn whether they want to or not, so it's not at will. Eons later, the Zoonoid leader, called the Zoa Lord...
That's Dr. Hill, for anyone who's keeping track at home.
...has awakened and formed the Kronos Corporation, because corporations are evil. This is still an 80s movie. To future develop the Zoonoid technology for world domination, among the alien remains was the Unit, ladies. A bio-boosted alien armor worn by the aliens as an ordinary shield, blah, 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 blah. It increases... the human's power 100-fold, he becomes the Gyver. Problem with that is, he's almost the equal of all the other Monster Men who nearly beat him every time. And in fact, they rip out his skull at one point.
They kill him at one point.
Well, I'll defend that. We have a mediocre Hapkido student being given the control of a suit of alien armor he does not know how to use.
Okay,
100-fold stronger.
That's why that's why he's not exactly the world's most competent fighter to start with.
Sergeant Kabuki Man, the Troma movie, had the exact same plot, except they actually recognized that the fact that their hero was incompetent was a jumping-off point for their story. It was a comedy, whereas the Gyver isn't, but at the same time, they could at least recognize their strengths and weaknesses, and this is a Troma movie.
You know what would have been funny if, not unlike, say, Doom, when you got the steroids, you would punch people and they would explode.
Oh, yeah.
Because
that's
if it
right.
was supposed to be 100 times more powerful, because literally 100-fold, like, because even if you're a bad karate guy, a sick jab 100 times more powerful than a normal jab would cave someone's face in.
I wish he had done that if he had this power to that black caricature who only spoke in hip-hop.
Oh, I texted Matt that, and he was like, is it more racist than the crows in Dumbo? I'm like, yeah, because that was 70 years ago, and this was in the 90s.
I imagine that's how Donald Trump views all black people, is that character right there.
What was the character's name, Matt?
Stryker.
This is Stryker. This is... you know who it was?
This actor?
This was Jimmy Walker. It was Jimmy J.J. Walker.
No.
Dynamite.
Yeah, that's why they have him say dynamite a couple times.
Oh, God.
It's an inside joke.
The problem with this is...
So that's four. That's four times this movie violates the Tom Servo law of movie references.
Mm-hmm. What is that? Is that the one we keep
talking
about here?
Never reference a good movie in the middle of your crappy movie.
Yeah. Although that's not a movie. Although the made-for-TV J.J. Walker Dynamite movie, which is, let's be honest, the title of his autobiography?
Yeah.
The ghost-written autobiography, Dynamite? Yeah, totally. Matt, you're going to have to help me here. Now, I want to say, this is probably the most clearly student film we've ever seen.
Yeah.
In fact, someone was wearing a UCLA film school shirt the entire movie.
Yeah, that's the lead character.
Well, pretty much the only scene that worked was when some of the what are they named called? The
Zoonoids.
Zoonoids. Okay, when the Zoonoids broke on that B movie horror film with Lena Quigley and some other actor, that's the only bit that worked because it actually recognized that there was humor in this premise.
Yeah, yeah. Now I want to make a point here, which you will appreciate. The other director is a guy named Steve Wang, and you might not know the name, but he was the makeup artist and one of the co-directors of Master of the Flying Guillotine.
Oh.
But again, he's also makeup artist first on IMDb. This explains more and more of the, but Master of the Flying Guillotine is, that's something. That is something. If you haven't seen it, Matt, that's a stay tuned, because it's literally like a large bowl with blades that someone throws and pulls, and it cuts someone's head off.
I think it's on Amazon Prime right now.
Yes, it's one of these movies that if you haven't seen, there's no way that you're going to believe how absurd it is until you see them decapitate someone with like a giant like mesh yo-yo.
My favorite B Kung Fu movie was Crippled Masters, where a guy whose legs are mauled teams up with a guy whose arms get cut off, and together they become kung fu masters.
I actually have a DVD called The 50 Worst Movies Ever Made. That's
and
one of
Crippled
the
Masters is on there.
But yeah.
Does it surprise anyone that this is an early 90s New Line Cinema movie?
No.
No, this is what they did. They scraped the bottom of every barrel. This is a barnacle of a movie.
Well, that's weird because apparently this is based on a manga.
Yeah.
So I really do think at the time they saw they had bought like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles for cheap, so they had the movie rights. They made that movie, which I know we've done, and it did very well at the box office. So they're like, let's just buy everything.
Hence the weird sounding names like the Zoonoids and the Zoa Lord and the Unit. They sound very anime.
Well, of course, on top of that, it's stuff that probably doesn't A, translate well, but B, I mean, that's like saying Debbie Does Dallas comes from a Monet painting. Like, it's just, at a certain point, you're like, well, we bought the name, and MacGyver's a thing, so if people say the Guyver quickly enough, maybe a bunch of middle-aged people from the 80s will come out to see it.
That was the best line in this movie. The Guyver is not mine to give. I am the Guyver.
His delivery is really bad. He seems tall. He seems fine when he's just being normal guy, but when he starts making dramatic pronouncements, it's just awful.
Well, and I'll let you know how bad they knew this movie was going to be. The official poster, and I'm showing it to my colleagues here now.
It's upside down.
But if you look at it, it's Mark Hamill behind the mask. Oh, they didn't even bother putting the other guy. And in fact, Mark Hamill's the only name on it.
I thought that this would be a Mark Hamill movie because he's like the first name actor that shows up.
Well, and on top of that, he's the only named actor in it. But what's, of course, more,
also,
he's
only
in it for...
You're also the only one who can act. I think he actually did a decent job screaming in horrible agony as he's transformed into a giant cockroach. It was much better than, "No, Luke, I am your father." No!
Well, at least that's an iconic scene. The cockroach bit happens like 10 minutes before the end. And before then, he's just walking around wearing a porn stash, speaking in monotone, pretending to be a CIA agent, but you're not fooling anyone, Mark. Come on, man.
And there's a scene where him and Miss Asagawa, Mitzi, or Mitzi, whatever her name is, are being chased through the lab by the short, obese T-Rex Zoonoid. It needed a Benny Hill soundtrack.
Entire movie needed a Benny Hill soundtrack.
Well,
just
frankly needed any soundtrack. There's almost no music. This movie comes out 8 years after Return of the Jedi, and 2 years before he's in Batman the Animated Series.
Oh.
He does the Emperor scream when he's being electrocuted. It's literally even filmed the same way, and that's a shame.
Okay, so that's what? We're up to like 6 times that this has broken the Tom Servo rule of movie references?
Well, I mean, to wit, I don't think either of them knew how to direct. So he was just doing things that better directors had told him to do. Now, we still have some excellent scene-chewing acting from Dr. Hill.
Oh.
Where he's like, anyone. I mean, like, he could be anyone from any action 80 movie
ever. He reminded me a lot of the villain from Halloween 3, that, like, old CEO who had stolen that bit of Stonehenge. Do you remember? Have you seen that?
Mm-hmm.
He reminded me a lot of that. He was just evil for no reason. His motivations were very poorly explained. It's like, okay, we need a villain. Let's use this guy. And Brian Hughes is like, well, I know a villain. I just produced a movie with one in it.
Well, I mean, that's literally what it was. Like, in the late 80s to early 90s, you could just have a villain. I mean, if it were a bikini car wash movie, he would be the guy who was trying to, like, convert the old thing into condos. Like, that was just the generic villain of anything that was a villain.
But he was so good in Reanimator.
He was fine here. Like, what do you need? I'm going to steal the... He was an Indiana Jones Nazi. I'm going to steal the treasure to take over the world! Bah, ha, ha.
Well, when he's angry at King Koopa or Lister, that's a character's name, the evil bald guy, he is unintentionally hilarious.
Who's the dude from The Hills of Eyes.
Yes. Okay. And he's a well-known quantity.
Yeah, he's a pretty well-known character actor.
And the problem is, you have a well-known character actor who's wearing the worst prosthetics ever for 80% of his role, and J.J. Walker, who's wearing his prosthetics the entire time. So they're not in this movie, are they? They're just doing VO. This movie is atrocious, and I'm glad we got to watch it. If you guys want to see it, it's for free on YouTube because no one bothered. The director's cut, uploaded by someone named Heaney Devily, which has been seen 130,000 times in 12 years.
How many thumbs up does it have? I forgot.
7. No, 902, and all of them better listen to this episode.
Oh, boy.
But yeah, that's what we're dealing with. Before we go further, Matt, so what did you think of the fight scenes in this? Because we brought it up earlier. That's why I'm setting you up.
As I said earlier that they did think it through a little bit, that someone who's a mediocre karate student is not going to suddenly turn into a kung fu master just because he's got powered armor on. So he's someone who does not know how to use his alien armor he's wearing, except just a standard, you know, punch and kick. And I didn't really have a problem with the fight scenes. I expected them to be a lot more violent than they were, because I remember there was some scenes where, like, limbs were getting ripped off, or just, you know, grab and pull. No sophistication there.
I'm pretty sure that was in the movie, though. There's, like, a scene where the Guyver rips one of the Zodanoid's arms off, but there's no blood or anything. It looks basically like he pulled a arm out of a socket for an action figure.
Every time you say those words, I imagine someone... I mean, I know this isn't how podcasting works, but, like, flipping the channels, like, on a radio station, and you're like, but the Zoanoids and the Guyver, and I'm just like, and then they change the channel again. Because this movie, there's nothing even compelling. It's not even named like a thing. It's not like The Force, which is a stupid name for anything, but you get it, right? Like, the Guyver. What is a guy? Like, it's not a guy, you know? And then number two, we're established at the beginning that he has a nemesis, sort of. But, like, further, we have this situation. Let's just put it this way. Character motivations don't make sense. We're established at the beginning that our main character, who I'm... What's the main character's name?
Sean.
I thought it was Mark.
Mark? Max was Mark Hamill's character.
Okay, so the Asian woman, whose name
Mitzi or something,
says his name 3 different ways. At one point when he dies, she calls him Mark. And I paused it because I was checking IMDb, and I'm like, that wasn't his name. And then I rewound, and she called him Matt the line before. And then before that, the bad guy called him Max. And I looked on IMDb, his name is Max. She just didn't bother to learn the script, I imagine. Also, I'd have been fine if she had an Asian accent. I believe the actress herself is Chinese.
Yeah, she's Chinese.
But they try to give her an American accent, and it sounds like Dr. House doing an American accent, where she's like, hello, I would like to fight the kung fu.
Now that's an insult. House had a good American accent. This woman's not even trying.
But in New Jersey, it's okay to overpronounce things. The thing is, her accent changes every time she says something. And on top of that, she had no practice saying it. Like, her lines come out where she says actors' names wrong, and they don't do a second take, apparently. The characters are different each time, and she's not even established. At the beginning, she's in the kung fu scene because we need, I guess, an Asian actress in a kung fu scene. The problem is, it's our main character, generic man, versus an Asian counterpart who's the bad guy. And as though it's a scene out of Karate Kid, they show up later and fight each other. but he still gets his ass kicked. Like, there's nothing learned.
Yeah, the gang clearly has some degree of intelligence. Instead of just hanging around fighting one at a time, they just swarm him.
And then number two, are they associated with Dr. Hill? I know I keep saying Dr. Hill because that's a better movie, but are they associated with the Kronos Corporation because they're all wearing the same gang colors as the people who later become the Zoonoids?
I don't think so. I think they just randomly jump him just because he's in their alley.
I thought Hills Have Eyes dude was from the Kronos Corporation.
Yeah, he is.
Well, and I thought he was controlling the gang as well.
Well, he has his Zoonoid entourage, Lena Quigley, Ratmaster C, and... a couple more.
Lena Quigley was the B-movie actress in the...
I thought she was the girl Zoonoid.
No, no, no. I mean, but
she's the one that was complaining, you're stepping all over my scream!
And then number two.
Okay.
Number two, I want to make a clear point here. This is very similar fight scenes to Power Rangers. The difference, of course, is it would take 4 episodes of Power Rangers to watch this, and they are better paced. The thing is... I mean that, because in a 3-act structure of a TV show, occasionally you have... characterization. And so the last 45 minutes of this movie being a broken, terrible action sequence, and at one point Mark Hamill is in a tube covered in water like he's a clone in Venture Brothers or something, is weird because in the next scene he's bone dry. But we'll get there. However, this is just a lot of awkward fighting between... And I'm going to describe the color scheme, the color schema of this whole movie, the mise en scène, excuse me. It's like a FPS on the Xbox 360.
Do you remember that show Mantis that was on Fox in the 90s for season? It looked a lot like that.
That's exactly right. It's all grays and browns and greens, and everyone is that color scheme. And the problem is, if you're watching Power Rangers, which this is very clearly close to, and I think Matt's right, it came out a little bit before the Japanese version by 6 months. So, bully for you. But what it does correct is the putties and the monsters are that gray, green, brown. However, the Power Rangers are bright, clean colors, so you can tell who's fighting who. And from behind, the Guyver is just wearing ground, this kind of gritty green-brown garbage against monsters who are gritty brown and green garbage, and you can't tell who's fighting who. And so half the time, I thought the Guyver was winning when he was about to lose, and he was outnumbered by people who was the same as him. It was impossible to follow anything.
Am I the only one who thought that the Guyver kind of looked like Lord Zedd?
Yeah, with that spike on his head.
Yeah, with the spike, exactly. Which made the fight scenes all that much more difficult to follow.
Impossible
exactly.
to follow, yeah. And the fact that he was by himself, and the other thing I thought, since it was an artifact, other than the fact that at one point the Guyver dies, they literally take the orb out of the middle of his head and the corpse goes lifeless, and they're like, oh, he's dead. A bad guy swallows it, and then they literally disembowel him as the Guyver is cloned out of his tissue.
With no blood, if I recall correctly.
What I would have wanted if I were the person directing this movie is Lady X, Mark Hamill, someone else to pick up the sphere and then become the Guyver. Because that would be, as Mark or as Matt said, or Max or whatever the hell his name is, said, if it's a artifact, it should be able to pass on from person to person.
See, I thought that's what they were going for, because when the woman was holding it in the third act, the tendrils that were growing out of this thing were latching onto her wrist.
But it didn't last more than 4 seconds before that scene resolved. Because
then she threw it in the mouth of Goatman, and then mayhem ensued.
Death rejected me.
Yeah, Mitzi is active or passive as the plot demands. She spends most of her time in a chokehold with a monster, and then finally she decides she's had enough of that. And she managed to take the Guyver hostage and then throws it into some dude's mouth.
Well, I will say as we kind of scream towards the end of this bizarre episode, the game, the rules to the game, if we're setting up a game here, make literally no sense. Because why does that clone someone? If all you have to do is make contact with it, why didn't it just, when they took it out of the whatever base it was in, clone into the last person who touched the Guyver?
I don't know.
Honestly, there are no rules. If, all of a sudden it becomes a magic saving, a saving throw, then it has to be a saving throw for everyone. It can't just be a saving throw for the person who just touched it last.
I think Dr. East, which is the most offensive reference in this movie, because it's Jeffrey Combs, he tried to explain it. He thought it was the Guyver cloning himself, which I kind of understand why this would be a mysterious artifact that would keep the suspense up, but it's handled so poorly.
It makes me think that they wanted it to be like an Ant-Man kind of thing, but they didn't explain it well enough. So rather than just having a small guy who can, like, rebuild himself, it was just kind of like, meh. It's really like that. That's literally what the script could just be called, like meh.
Yeah. Maybe that's what they were going for, and it was regenerating the goo tendrils. Was it might have regenerated Sean eventually?
Well, they could have explained that.
There could have been anything. We started the movie with a scroll that was narrated as though we were all idiots. And so that's bad enough, right? Plus, and so part two, then things happen that don't make sense to the rest of the plot, and no one comes in with a clipboard and goes, my God, Jim, they're regenerating themselves. It's just kind of, it's baffling. It's just baffling. So, other thing, anything else? I'm just about done with this movie. It's going to be our first riff, I'm telling you. It's that kind of movie, guys. If you haven't seen it before Heine takes it down, or Heinle, or whatever her name was, you should, because that beer in the back of your fridge isn't going to drink itself.
Mm.
But this does make sense to me in mid-90s. Like, when you were watching this, I was probably watching Rocco's Modern Life and developing a sense of humor.
Yeah.
I was watching Rocco's Modern Life, too, somewhat later, but...
Wait, I thought you were saying you couldn't watch it.
Yeah, but I watched it at other people's houses and places, so I did watch Rocco's Modern Life.
How I saw MTV as a kid, so I'm kind of with you.
Beavis and Butthead, and things like that.
Wasn't allowed to watch Beavis and Butthead or Ren and Stimpy as a child.
Well,
Also, on Saturday morning, the TV had to be off before 9, so I never got to watch The Tick.
Oh, that's the worst thing I've heard yet. Now, that being said... I would love to see a remake of this with Patrick Warburton.
Oh.
A remake of this wouldn't be so bad. You know, good. It had a decent concept, I think. It could have been executed so much better.
It should have been a comedy if they were going to do anything with it. I mean, Power Rangers is still kind of a comedy, which is probably why sad 30-year-olds are still watching it.
Sad 30-year-olds are still starring in it. It keeps going and going and going.
I know.
Because it was a developed idea. Now, that being said, to Matt's point... Warner Brothers bought the rights in 2008, so they might be doing something with it. But if it was 2008, that's 8 years ago now.
I thought the rights reverted to the company in Japan.
No.
Mm.
I thought that's why they never made like any more of these.
Because they made the sequel, which was much better, and there was talk about making a third, but the Japanese company got the rights back.
Well, if I may, you didn't make us watch the sequel, so if this was the only thing I saw, I would say bravo to whoever owned brown-colored paint. Also, if you missed what we were talking about earlier, at one point they jump a fence and they end up in like a Spielberg knockoff film.
Yes, they even have the guy in the Spielberg glasses
and the hat and the beard. Like, it really does look like, so if you guys don't know this,
it looks like Steven Spielberg's non-union Mexican equivalent.
Senor Spielbergo. I was also thinking of in Mortal Kombat, like he really wanted to do the Mortal Kombat movie but couldn't, so there's like a Mortal Kombat like Spielberg proxy that shows up halfway through. Because apparently Spielberg loves playing video games. Like, I just imagine him on the set of, like, Jurassic Park with a Sega in between, like, with a, Ian Malcolm is going to, you know, play some Sonic the, or Hedgehog.
I imagine Jeff Goldblum was more of an Earthworm Jim man.
So if you're listening to this, this is coming out because Power Rangers movie is coming out, and Matt Quinn said this is like Power Rangers. And so, not unlike Power Rangers, this is a movie that exists. But when I was a kid, what ruined my childhood, and I used to watch Power Rangers after school every day and then punch things. My younger brother, which at one point I think went through a French glass window. French door. But a good friend of mine named Thomas Herman is going to do Power Rangers, the movie, with me coming up soon. So before Power Rangers, the new one, comes out, the one with Ivan Ooze. I know. Hammer and Sickle himself, Ivan Ooze. Before that comes out. With that in mind, I think we should go around giving our final judgments, and we'll end with Matt since he was defending it. Daniel.
I kind of want to go back to the Rocco's Modern Life and just go, Guyver Day is a very dangerous day. Jeez. I can understand why the Sci-Fi Channel was rerunning this a lot back in the day, because it really looks like it was a made-for-sci-fi movie. It's poorly paced. It's just filled with character actors who've done much better things. The action's terrible. The blocking's terrible. The effects are god-awful. Oh, God. Watch it at like 2 a.m. on YouTube when you're just blitzed out of your mind and you may enjoy it. Other than that, stay away.
Matt.
Yeah, but another Matt's childhood disappointment. It could have been so much better. I remember it being better, but it was not. Although I'll find some defensive elements here, which I'll probably bring up in my blog review. But, I mean, overall, nah.
I feel like following around with a bell just going, shame. Shame.
I have a friend who voted for Trump. I told him I'd do that.
Please do.
Well, I mean, it's what's his name? Looking with a lantern, looking for one last honest man. Like, you're just like, I'm looking in the darkness through Matt's history for a movie worth watching. Here's the thing about it. I would agree with Matt on one hand. I totally get watching this movie when you're in middle school or whatever and thinking this is fun, because it's again, it's five episodes of Power Rangers strung together without any character development. But that's saying Power Rangers has character development, which is weird. They recast one of the male characters as a woman and no one noticed in America. But I will say here, this is a riffable movie. It's a fun movie. Watching it with my wife and infant, the infant immediately got it. So Matt has one person in her side. But the other thing is, this movie is baffling. Like, I couldn't tell you the timeline. There's like four chase scenes where people are being chased, even after the hero's the hero. The girl sees Mark Hamill in, like, the hero sees Mark Hamill in the girl's place and gets really offended that she might have a friend. That's never coming back. They kiss at the end, even though Mark Hamill's been murdered. I don't know. Like, the movie has no pacing, no skill involved in making it. I could direct a better movie, and I have. It's called Jimmy Goes to the Farm. It's a YouTube video. It's a musical. I play Jimmy and the Farm.
Stay tuned.
But I will say, at the end of the day, this is the kind of movie that me, as someone who has a bad sense of humor, wishes that I was shocked that Mystery Science Theater hadn't done this. So I'm going to start tweeting Jonah Ray constantly. And who else is on that? It's Jonah Ray. It's,
I know Dan Harmon's writing for it, isn't he?
He sure is. So is I almost said Iggy Azalea.
Oh, Patton Oswalt's on it, and Felicia Day.
Felicia Day.
Those are the mads.
And Elliot Kalin from Flophouse and The Daily Show fame is the head writer. So, please, this is there, it exists, and it's free on YouTube. The one thing I will say about the new Mystery Science Theater, I hope they do movies that we can all watch. However, unfortunately, we are out of time, and Matt is desperately running out of childhood. So we're going to end this episode. We'll come back in 2 weeks with another episode where we'll put more of the Power Rangers past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Myopia Defend Your Childhood is produced by Dude Letter Podcast. It's hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced and mixed by Ann Burns, and edited by Nick Hoffman. Our graphic designer is Scott Miller. The theme song is Caroline, written and performed by The Serenaders. Purchase their music through the Amazon link on dudeletter.com. Questions or comments? Please visit myopiapodcast.com or contact us through myopiapodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at myopiapodcast and at dudeletter, and find us on our Facebook, Stitcher, and iTunes pages. And while you're on iTunes, please rate and review our podcast. It helps us out a lot. Want to give us money? Go to myopiapodcast.com/Amazon and purchase stuff like normal. Myopia gets a piece of the action.